Let's look again at this question about, was Jesus married? Was he married to Mary Magdalene? Which is a speculation that became popular in the Middle Ages. And Ground appeals, as you know, to three bits of evidence: Leonardo's picture of the Last Supper, the Gnostic Gospels, and the claim that Jesus must have been married, because if you were a good Jew in those days, you were married, by definition. Let's look at these bits of evidence very, very quickly. And I'm going to probably skate over some of the ground that Tony's already skated over. Leonardo's picture of the Last Supper. Well, the first thing to say about this is that what Dan Brown says is just a speculative interpretation. This thing about the figure on the left as you look at the picture, on the left of Jesus being Mary Magdalene, I haven't found one serious art historian who believes it, whether or not they're Christians. Okay, there just is no sense that that is a serious interpretation. But suppose it was a serious interpretation. Just suppose, for the sake of argument, that Leonardo really did want to portray that figure as being Mary. Improbable as that is. He painted this picture between 1495 and 1498. So 1500 years, roughly, after the event. He didn't know any more about the event than we do. In fact, given that we've got things like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Library, we know more about it than he did. So even if he meant it that way, that was pure guesswork. What evidence did he have? Well, of course, Dan Brown claims that he was one of the grand masters of the Priory of Sion. Tony's already unpacked that one. It's a 20th century French hoax. There's no evidence at all for its existence in the Middle Ages. What about the Gnostic Gospels? Dan Brown says the Gnostic Gospels claim repeatedly that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. Well, we've already seen that they are later than the Bible's Gospels. They don't give us real historical evidence about Jesus. And there is nothing that they actually say that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. There's one place that Dan Brown quotes, and he quotes it wrong. Look it up. Go and buy the book from Amazon and look it up. He misquotes it at a key point. And the Gnostic Gospels, whatever they said, were not actually concerned with history. They were concerned with allegory and myth and fantasy. So in the Gnostic Gospels, there is no historical evidence that suggests that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene or to anyone else. So that quote that Tony gave us earlier about James Robinson, the editor of the Nag Hammadi Library, saying there's no real evidence about Mary Magdalene outside of the Gospels and the Bible. What about the claim that Jesus must have been married because all good Jews in those days were married? Well, no. The community behind the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Qumran community, were celibate. They didn't marry. So we know, historically, of at least one large group of Jewish men who didn't practice marriage. A bit more evidence. In Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, he's basically writing, and among other things, he's trying to justify to them that it's okay for a Christian minister to be married. And he lists various people who were. But he doesn't mention Jesus. Now, if Jesus had been married, it would have been the easiest thing in the world for Paul to have said, look, Jesus was married. It would have conclusively demonstrated his argument. And he doesn't say it. And the reason he doesn't say it is because everyone knew that Jesus wasn't married. So to sum up these main claims that Dan Brown makes, the Gospels in the Bible are more reliable, historically, closer to the events than the Gnostic Gospels. Christians believe that Jesus was the Son of God right from the outset, not from 325 AD. And there's no historical evidence that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene or to anyone else. Now, in a moment we're going to stop and invite questions, but just as we head towards that point, I'd like to sort of leave something with you to think about. Why did the first Christians believe that Jesus was the Son of God? If you think about it, it was a very odd thing for them to believe. If Christianity had begun in the Greek world, it was okay. There were lots of Greek gods and goddesses, and they married and they fornicated and they had children. The idea of somebody being the Son of God was okay. But it was born in the Jewish world, where there was one God who didn't marry and didn't have children. And to suddenly claim that this historical figure, this carpenter, this tradesman from Manchester, which is basically what he was, excuse me if there's anyone here from Manchester, but he was an upcountry hick. And yet the Christians started believing and claiming and going around the Roman world saying, this guy is the Son of God. It was a very odd thing to happen. And it's something that needs to be accounted for historically. Why was it that this guy is put to death in about 29 AD? Within a few years, his movement is spreading out across the known world. Within 300 years, the Roman emperor himself becomes a Christian. And this movement survives the collapse of the Roman Empire. It's something that needs to be accounted for. I think there are two things that account for it. One is that Jesus himself made that claim. He claimed it indirectly in some of the things that he did. For example, in forgiving sins. When Jesus in Mark chapter 2 says to somebody, "Your sins are forgiven," the Jewish leaders standing there say, "Who does this guy think he is? Only God can forgive sins." And they're absolutely right. They and Jesus would have agreed about that. By saying, "Your sins are forgiven," he is making an implicit claim to be the Son of God. The same with this story about stilling the storm. If you go back to the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, the only person who could still storms was God. So Jesus implicitly, again and again through the Gospels, makes this claim that he's the Son of God. He also makes the claim very explicitly, especially towards the end of his life. Matthew chapter 26, when he's on trial, one of the Jewish leaders says, "Tell us if you're the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus says, "Yes, it's as you say." So the claim was there. Now, a little bit of caution on this. Christians did believe that Jesus was the Son of God right from the outset. He did make that claim. But there is a tiny little wedge of truth in what Dan Brown says, which is that for hundreds of years they debated about what that claim meant exactly. And there was debate at the Council of Nicaea about what it meant to say that Jesus is the Son of God. So they were debating that issue, but the core belief that he was the Son of God wasn't up for negotiation, really. So the first piece of evidence, I think, is that Jesus himself claimed that he was the Son of God. And the second is that the Christians, within a very few days after his death, believed that he'd risen from the dead. And that was the thing that sealed to them the idea that he was more than just a man. He was declared with power to be the Son of God by his resurrection from the dead, Paul writes, in about 57 AD. Here's a quotation from Mark Tully, the BBC journalist. He says, "That man was probably a failure in his own time. He taught in strange riddles. He didn't convince his fellow Jews, and he didn't overthrow Rome. From that failure," Tully says, "I've come to what for me is the most important conclusion of all, that the hardest, apparently least historical article of the Christian faith, the resurrection, must have happened. If there had been no miracle after Jesus' death, there would have been no grounds for faith in a failed life. No resurrection, no church." For the sake of time, I'm not going to look at some of the evidence that is there for the resurrection. There is good evidence. It can be explored. There are books, there are internet sites, there are sources on that. So let's quickly skate over that. But again, just to say that, there is something there that needs to be explained. And when you're talking, if you're talking to somebody from work who's seen the Da Vinci Code, who has bought into it, or if you've seen the film or read the book and you've bought into it, please consider, think about the historical evidence. What was it that started, that gave rise to the Christian movement? It was a very strange thing to happen. Leave you to think about that. Let me just mention some resources, and I think Tony might want to mention a few resources as well. We've got a website that is relating to and unpacking material about the Da Vinci Code, and that's the address for that. We've also got a DVD, which goes into some of the claims that Dan Brown makes and some of the evidence about them. We've got copies of that here on sale this evening. We've priced it as keenly as we can. Here's the commercial. £9.99, and we will take cash, checks, credit cards, gold, conflict diamonds, Kruger rands, or even, you know, your credit is good if you promise to pay later. So those are resources that are available afterwards. And now we're going to open it up, and I hope you've got some comments and questions. I'm going to get Tony to come and stand up here, so if you've got difficult comments and questions, I can point them at him.